Okay, yes, I've got a second presentation here I've got to squeeze in the next 25 minutes. I'm also here to talk to you about a public health document architecture. And I'm doing this in conjunction with Dan Pollack with the NHSN and our normal disclaimer there. And what we're going to talk about here is, first we're going to answer the question, what is a public health document architecture and why do we need one? And then we're going to go into what are the requirements for a public health document architecture, what does a public health document architecture look like. I've got a slide in here about HL7 standards development. I'll probably skip over because I wasn't expecting this to be lumped together with my other presentation. And finally, the current efforts at HL7 for a public health document architecture. So we'll dive right in. What is a document architecture, public health or otherwise? It has a number of features. Perhaps the most important one is that it's human readable. A structured document can be rendered for human reading. That doesn't mean it's directly readable, but it can be rendered using technology. It may actually contain discrete machine readable data that is related to the human readable content. And the next item of importance with a document is that it has persistence. Its structured documents exist unchanged for long periods of time. The next one is wholeness. A structured document forms an entire interrelated whole. Context. A structured document establishes the context for its content. The next one is stewardship. An organization is responsible for managing a structured document and is the custodian of that document. Authentication, a structured document may be authenticated as part of the document lifecycle. So, why does public health need a document architecture? First of all, many public health activities today, activities and processes utilize paper documents and forms. So, we already have documents. An electronic document architecture will enable the electronic equivalent. Some of the paper documents and forms have already migrated to web-based forms, but these have the limitation requiring network access to author and submit the form. Electronic documents allow a distributed approach similar to paper document. Authoring can occur away from a network and distribution occur when connected, for instance. Use cases for a public health document architecture. These are ones that I, in particular, have been involved with here at the CDC or have heard about. There's case reporting from provider to public health, includes electronic submissions of reportable condition case reports from providers or facilities to state and local public health agencies. This type of reporting certainly includes reporting instances of human disease, but it may include reporting animal disease, such as rabies and avian flu or swine flu, et cetera. Next one, case reporting within public health. In the course of investigating a public health case, investigators may need to exchange case data that's been gathered. In the past, this was called Outbreak General, and this sort of information is exchanged using spreadsheets, paper forms, proprietary electronic formats, etc. today. Nationally notifiable condition reporting, NNDs. This generally precludes the inclusion of personally identifiable information. Nationally notifiable data exchanges are used for tracking trends, determining appropriate responses, and evaluating responses. Outbreak notifications. Notification from one public health organization or jurisdiction to another or to providers regarding an outbreak. Then there is outbreak investigation data exchange. Outbreaks occur when multiple cases for a condition are reported. In the course of investigating an outbreak, investigators may need to exchange data involving that outbreak. Infection reporting of infection-related reports from providers to public health. This is essentially the NHSN use case. Case reporting and outbreak definitions, public health jurisdictions exchanging information about cases and outbreaks definitions. These definitions would include information regarding the criteria used to evaluate and declare cases and outbreaks. automated distribution of these criteria would be very useful in emerging disease situations and such. Some of the requirements for a public health document architecture. One of the very biggest is the ability to convey any clinical data as reported to clinicians, such as lab data, diagnostic images, pharmacy information, prescription, et cetera, clinical diagnoses and findings. Really, anything you find in an electronic medical record today should be transmittable to public health. So that, out of the box, that one's a must-have. Then there's a whole set of data that public health is particularly interested in, including case data, outbreak and exposure information, public health investigations information, countermeasure information, etc. There's just a whole host of different information that public health in particular is interested in, so we need to be able to handle all that too. Then there's the subjects of the document. What the document is about. Typically, that's a human, but it can be a lot of different things. It may be groups of people, populations, or individuals. It may be animals, populations of animals, herds, individuals, etc. Places, locations. It could include almost anything. It could be the subject of a public health investigation, and we might need to do a report about it. So I included the picture of the kitchen sink. We may be investigating that. Then there's the association that those subjects form with one another. People have social relationships, so they have employment relationships. There's the physical location that things are located. And then there's the compositional relationships, you know, my fingers attached to my hand, et cetera, except when I've been blown up. And we need to be able to potentially be able to document all that stuff. So, knowing all those things that we need to have, what does a public health document look like? Well, we've got some metadata about the document. We want to know who wrote it, who's the custodian of it, and there's a bunch of potential document metadata. But then we got the subject of the document and the associations those subjects may have with one another, and then there's the actual content. So that's one view of what it looks like. It's got to have something that has all that information in it. So now, danger. Danger, warning. We're entering the HL7 V3 zone, so those of you who are scared of that stuff, you're now been warned. Okay, so we're going to talk about version 3 structures for a public health document architecture. And in doing so, we're going to look at three basic things. First of all is the structured document architecture. That gives you the overall document header information. Then we're going to look at something called public health entity, which deals with the subject aspect of a document, and finally the public health statement model, which deals with all the nitty-gritty information content, and then we'll look at putting it all together. So here's a HL7 V3 model called structured document architecture. We won't go into too much detail here other than this carries all the metadata about the document. Who wrote it, when it was written, who's in charge of it, who's the custodian of it. There's a lot of information buried in there. Author, data enterer, custodian, authenticator, performer, subject, record target, which is the electronic record that this document is targeted for, and information about the setting that the acts involved in the document are being described. The structured document architecture also includes a sections of the document that contain the narrative, the human readable portion. So this is one of the key pieces of a document, is it's human readable, and the sections hold that content. It may also contain the actual V3 or the discrete data that often public health is really interested in, which can be handled in automated fashion. The next piece, public health entity. This is a pretty complex model, but it deals with the two pieces that are actually quite complex, the subjects of a document and all the associations those subjects may have. If you only got one single subject, if it's a single person, you may still want to know all their some information about their employer or their family and things like that. So there's an awful lot of associations, and this model can handle things from related family members to, like I said, if you had to put together my hand, it can document the pieces of my hand. So it can handle all kinds of different kinds of associations. It's designed to allow anything to be described, including people, places, objects, vehicles, companies, organizations, clubs, animals, organizations, herds, and allows you to capture all the relationships and associations those things can form with one another. Next, public health statement. Again, this is documents the things like exposures, investigations, outbreaks, cases, etc., incidents, all these things, as well as all the data that could be captured in a electronic medical record. So that's a complex model in and of its own. Like I said, public health investigation data, case data, outbreak and pandemic data, exposure events, incidents, and all the relevant clinical data. And it also documents the things that are participating in those acts, such as performers, et cetera. And then finally, putting it all together. On the left-hand side, we have a basic RIM model. Uses some RIM shortcuts to document things, like this is that public health entity model. That's a shortcut for that. And down here is a public health statement. That's a shortcut for that. So we hide some of the complexity. So that actually looks fairly simple. You've got your structured, well, we've hidden the complexity. But again, it has all the things that you see on the right-hand side that we talked about that need to be in there. So, and then finally, well, not finally, but on the wire, HL7 uses XML to encode these documents. So ultimately, this will end up being an XML document. And this is where I'm going to skip over things, because we talked about this in the last part of this. The last one were the standards development process. So, current public health document effort at HL7 is today focused on HL7 CDA Release 3, Clinical Document Architecture Release 3. Release 2 of the clinical document architecture has been wildly successful. It's being broadly adopted, not just around the world, but in the U.S. And so it's one of the only V3 standards that has been picked up here in the U.S. And so CDA R3 is going to build on that success. We have that project is sponsored by Structured Documents, and other work groups are participating in the project, including FIR and Orders and Observations and Clinical Statement work groups. The CDA R3 is currently in the development process, identifying requirements. The fundamental scope of CDA of the project is to enhance and refine existing CDA R2 standard. They have agreed in principle to that public health documents are in scope. And it was very hard for them to turn that down, because CDA R2 is already being used for public health case reporting and infection reporting. So it's very difficult for them to say, no, CDAR3 can't include that, because it's already in CDAR2. So the actual modeling of CDAR3 has not been tackled. So what I was showing you today is just speculation. It's not, you know, that's how I would like to see things progress. I'm actually expecting some resistance from the clinician community about some of the complexity of public health entity and public health statement. They don't necessarily need that for human medicine, but we need it for public health in general. Possible solutions of the clinical versus public health is Most of these I don't like. One limited clinical solution that ignores public health. I really want to avoid that one. And I think I don't think we're in real danger of that particular one. I also actually don't want to see one that is only a public health solution that ignores the clinical needs. And I really don't want to see two completely separate solutions, each providing different solutions for similar problems, because a lot of our problems overlap. I would much rather see a common underlying model, but allow some sort of constraints that allow the two to coexist peacefully, but do things in a similar fashion. And so I'm pushing for the last one. Other CDA R3 issues, should full rim content be allowed? That's probably the hottest topic we have for it right now. There are that's full of pitfalls. By allowing full rim content, that it actually forces implementers to actually have to understand the full rim. And I'll say that the more that we can detail, we can put in implementation guides and into the standard itself and take some of those choices away from the implementers, will simplify the process implementers have to go through to implement V3. Another topic is, should message payload models be allowed? That's actually, there are domain committees who have developed message models for a lot of the stuff that also needs to be carried in CDA. There are people who say we should just be able to plug that in. And there are people who say, no, you should never do that. So there's discussion or debate or argument going on about that. Should CDA be capable of managing workflows such as ordering? That's a hot topic for orders and observations, I know. There are some technical issues around the complexity of the XML schemas. There also a question whether the latest HL7 V3 data type should be incorporated into CDA. Actually, I think that one's been resolved since this was originally written. So yes, it will be incorporating the latest data types. The timeline for CDA R3, right now they're accepting formal change requests through the September working group meeting. That I think that's probably going to be extended, but it might not be. They're originally planning to have its initial ballot in January 2010. That's unlikely at this point, but initial balloting should occur sometime next year. Normative balloting is targeted for late 2010, and that, because of the slide, that'll probably slide into 2011. Are you interested in any? If you're interested in any of this, get involved. You can participate in the structured document and for work groups. You can participate in the CDA R3 project meetings, and you can, when it comes out for balloting, you can review and vote on the CDA R3 ballots in 2010 and beyond. So, questions?
Stunned.
Well, V3 does that to people.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yes, Dan.
So we have electronic messages. We've got,
yes,
electronic documents. Right? Okay, we have electronic messages and we have electronic documents. And ELR, electronic laboratory reporting, public health, really is a form of a public health case report. Do we need
It's being used as that, yes.
I mean, it's in effect a morbidity report.
Yes.
So where are we going? Is there going to be a use case to enable message-based communications between entities reporting to public health and public health? Or should we look to public health architecture solutions as a way that combines both the morbidity reporting from clinical systems with laboratory systems, and have public health architecture be the common denominator or bridge between it and the message data that would ordinarily be transmitted as a message payload, instead be used in the sending side to create a CDA instance that can be transmitted and absorbed as such?
Well, my goal is that public health document architecture is no different than clinical document architecture, mm-hmm. just more expressive. For the ELR use case, it doesn't need everything that's being built in for public health, but it does need what's being built in for clinical. So there should be no difference between what is being reported by a laboratory today should be able to use a CDA document that is effectively, like you point out, a case report for doing the exact same thing in the future. I know HITSB has identified using a IHE CDA profile for laboratory reporting as another alternative to reporting laboratory results. I don't know that that's been broadly adopted by any of the labs in the U.S. yet, but it might be. Is that kind of getting to where you're talking about?
Well, let me be a little bit more concrete for now.
Okay.
Are we putting state and local health departments in a position where they need to have two different infrastructures, one for absorbing and processing messages and one for absorbing and processing documents?
Ah, okay, okay.
Could we instead envision a merger that would involve the sending entities assuming responsibility for generating a single
document? Ah, okay, okay. Yeah, that's an interesting question. And I think that's one actually Rita is trying to grapple with today because she's involved with the case reporting project in NICFI using CDA. And as it stands today, that's definitely two different infrastructures.
Mm-hmm.
In part, your question actually is relevant to the HL7 safe discussion we had in the last session, because there we're trying to grapple with the same content across multiple paradigms, and so that's key to what you're talking about, is the same lab content, whether you're sending it as a document or as a message, and
or as a payload for a service.
And I don't know the answer yet, quite frankly. It's being, we're trying to iron it out at HL7 how the standard's going to deal with it, and that's going to have some direct impact on the answer that evolves in the long term, I think. He's sending.
HL7's
yeah, he's sending me to help do that.
We got a big NHSM contingent.
Yes. So that's a very important question, and I don't have the answer for you.
We've got time for one more question, but
yes.
Let me make a personal plug here. We're just getting started with an interest group for case reporting. It's not a formal community of practice because those things have to be blessed by God. But stay tuned if you've heard about Public Health Connect, the collaboration workspace that's been put into production by the Public Health Informatics Institute. We'll be advertising a space where we can start talking about some of these case reporting issues. And I'll just put my two cents worth in as a state representative, which is I'm much more interested in the information. I think we can build the tools that will help states and localities deal with the complexity of receiving it in different ways. But I don't think I can deal with somebody defining something differently. I think I can handle a version 2 message and a CDA document much more easily than I can handle three different definitions for the same term. So I think the real problems are not in the way things are sent, but in the information model and the content of the information. That's my plug.